Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday edition of SJS here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Our Hilscher's General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Hilscher's General Store. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. And, of course, don't forget Hilscher's General Store, located 7 miles south of Seals Grove on Routes 11 and 15. You name it, they have it. It's this time of the year that you need to go in and stock up on all the necessities to get you through the spring. And on top of that, we're at the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today, we'll be talking with Mark Wogenrich, who is the longtime beat writer of Penn State football for the Allentown Morning Call. Mark will join us to talk about the Nittany Lions in just a few moments. Penn State will have their final practice of the spring today. They're working on a Beaver Stadium today before the blue-white game on Saturday at noon. Tomorrow, head basketball coach Patrick Chambers will be our guest. And on Friday, Bill O'Brien will join us to talk about how the spring went for the Nittany Lion football team. I know yesterday we did talk about whether you hesitate to go to a sporting event. Look, the bottom line is, be you. Be yourself. It's always very important to go through this. And for all of us, we should keep being us. Be vigilant, be smart, but keep being us. Now above the noise, here's Dan Patrick.
8 seconds left. Got to go to the end zone now.
They have to go to the end zone now and hope that they either score a touchdown or they get it within 8 seconds so they get another play.
Three-man rush, and Young stumbles on the way back and fires up the middle. Pass is caught by Owens. Owens made the catch. Oh, my God!
The legendary Pat Summerall passed away yesterday. We'll talk about that for a few minutes, and then there are other things going on. The suspect has been identified in the Boston bombing. There's been no arrest made yet, contrary to reports. We're going to have two guests on today. Mark Wogenrich is going to be joining us at 3:35, the beat writer for the Allentown Morning Call. And then Bob Crow, who was in between the blasts as he approached the finish line Monday, and will give us his perspective. He will join us at 4:06. That's what we have today. Kevin will have somebody from IndyCar at 5 o'clock.
No, it's a little too early for that yet.
They're racing on Sunday.
I know. It's a little too early yet. By the way, that's my favorite Pat Summerall call. Is from the 98 wild card playoff game. And you know why?
It's the only significant catch Terrell Owens ever made.
No. Well, that might be true. That might be true. But it was vintage Pat Summerall. I mean, it was just vintage Pat Summerall. It wasn't overly excited. It was his normal call voice. Describe the play in basic detail and stop, and then let everything else around happen.
Mm-hmm. It was perfect for him. It was perfect for him. His style fit perfectly for him. It fit perfectly for Tom Brookshire. It fit perfectly for John Madden. And it worked great for the audience. Everybody has different styles. And Pat Summerall's was perfect for him. I mean, as an analyst, I listened to a little bit of a tape today of Super Bowl IV. They worked with Jack Buck. And, you know, the reason that he got split up, the reason he went from color to play-by-play, ever hear this story?
I heard it with Dan Patrick today. That was the first time I heard it. But go ahead.
He goes in to talk to Bob Wessler in the middle of the season, I think in 74. He said, I got to break you and Buck up. He says, why is that? He says, you sound too much alike. No. He says, well, he says, so, you know, he said, we're going to have to pair you up with somebody else. He says, is it what I want to do going forward? He said, well, I'd like to do play-by-play. He says, okay. He says, who do you want to work with? He says, Brookshire. He says, great. He says, boy, he says, that'll be a lot of fun starting next year. He goes, no, that's going to be this weekend.
Yeah, and then they were worried about him having too much fun together.
Right. Yeah. And they did. They had fun. And then, of course, Madden, he'd never really had worked with Madden until it came time to work with him. The first game he does with Madden is in Tampa at the old Sombrero, not at the new place. The press box at the old Tampa Stadium was high up, looking down. He gets in there, and he says, you know, and Madden's all sweaty. He's just, oh, he's sweating the whole deal. And Pat's thinking himself, well, geez, if he's this nervous, this isn't going to be a lot of fun. Turned out that Madden was not only afraid of flying, he was afraid of heights.
See, I knew about the flying, but I didn't know about the heights.
Yeah, he said he was afraid of heights. And then, of course, they developed a great friendship after that. But
yeah, I think that, you know, there's another, this is just like another part of my childhood gone now. I mean, Summerall was another one. I had honestly, because of when I grew up and watched him, I'd forgotten that he was a place kicker for the Giants. I mean, I knew it, but I'd forgotten it over the years.
Oh,
and I
The reason the greatest game ever. I talked about this. When did I talk about this?
Well, no. I mean, I know you've talked about it on the show, but I mean, up until
we talked
recently.
No, but we talked about it in December. No, we talked about it in December. As a matter of fact, because we were going through the greatest game ever played in the NFL, or the most significant game, the Colts Giants overtime game.
Right.
And I explained that Pat Summerall created that. Because on the last game of the regular season, he kicked a 49-yard field goal in the snow to beat Cleveland and force a playoff game with the Browns, with the Giants subsequently won 10-0. That then set up the game with the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, and all the years I watched him, I never really realized that he was a player before he was a play-by-play or even color analyst.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what's significant watching this Super Bowl IV thing. I only watched like 5 minutes of it. I kind of clicked ahead. Because the whole broadcast is on there. The entire broadcast. Being on CBS, he, of course, knows everything you need to know about the Vikings. Joe Capp, Bill Brown, Dave Osborne, Wally Hilgenberg, Carl Eller, Alan Page, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Gene Washington, the wideout. Joe Capp, Gary Quazzo, the backup quarterback, blah, blah, blah. He knows all about that stuff because he's on CBS. That's their job. That's what they do. And he had just called the NFL championship game in which the Vikings up in Bloomington shut out the Cleveland Browns. So he knows all about that. And he's in the pregame, and he's saying, hey, look, you know, he said they're really worried because when they look at Kansas City, they're the kind of physical team that gives the Vikings a lot of trouble, blah, blah, blah. I mean, prophetic. There's then a point, and I think it's near halftime. The shotgun had been used by the 49ers in the late 50s with Billy Kilmer, Y.A. Tittle, it might even been George Myra, but mostly Billy Kilmer. And then the shotgun went away and did not come back until 1970 with Tom Landry and Dallas with Craig Morton and Roger Staubach. This is 1970. Now remember, the 1969 season is the last year of the AFL. So this is the 1970 Super Bowl, but it's the 69 season. So the Cowboys haven't brought the shotgun back. Suddenly, Kansas City goes into shotgun. But it's ridiculous to watch it. Because when you watch shotgun now, what are they, what, 4 or 5 yards back?
Yeah.
Take the snap, make a play. Len Dawson goes back 10 yards.
It's almost like a punt.
Almost like he's in a punt formation almost. Then takes it, and then Wally Hilgenberg almost picked it off. Summerall was so prepared that when they did it, And even though Hilgenberg almost picked it off, he said, when they ran this formation against the Rams in the preseason, because remember, NFL, AFL teams were playing preseason games against each other to help set up the merger. When they used this against the Rams in the preseason, they gave the Rams fits with it. And I looked at that and I said, now that is one well-prepared guy, because he didn't know. He didn't see Kansas City play once all year.
The other thing I liked, and like, again, growing up watching Summerall and Madden, they had a flow about them. And you and I talk about this all the time when critiquing different things that I've done over the past, is the flow. They had a flow that was just amazing. When one stopped, the other started. And Summerall knew exactly how to lead Madden into being John Madden.
Mm-hmm. Or else he gave him the space to be John Madden.
And even though John Madden has worked with others, and maybe this is just me and the way I see it, but I always saw him sounding better and having just a better flow with Summerall.
He was also younger, too.
Well, that may be the part of it, too. I think they're very funny in The Replacements, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they are funny in The Replacements. Yeah, they are funny in The Replacements. They did a great job.
Well, they frown on fraternizing with the cheerleaders, John.
But yeah, I mean, look. When I talk to my class about broadcasting, I said, look, there's one thing I can't tell you because you just don't know. You don't ever know. And you can't teach chemistry. You can't. You just go out there and all of a sudden you have it or you don't. Now, the two guys that I do games with, it's unbelievable. I don't know why Jack and I have chemistry, and I don't know why Dick and I have chemistry, and I don't know why it's happened since the first day. I don't know. Well, they had it. Madden and Summerall had it, just like Summerall had it with Brookshire. Now, Summerall and Brookshire were buddies. I mean, they ran together. But you can't explain it. But his style was perfect. He was great on tennis. That understated style was just great on tennis. He had it. That understated style was great on golf.
Yeah, he did the Masters before Nance.
Yep. Somebody had to. Mark Wogenrich. Next half hour, Bob Crow. I'm being in between Bob Blass in Boston. That's at 4:06. Tomorrow, Patrick Chambers. Friday, Bill O'Brien.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We will keep you up to date on what's happening in Boston. The federal building has been evacuated. The federal courthouse in Boston has been evacuated. They evidently have identified at least one, possibly two individuals. And as we were doing the show on Monday, we told you what camera we thought would be the critical camera. I told you possibly it would be the Lord and Taylor camera. And evidently it is the Lord and Taylor camera that spotted this individual, at least the first one. We'll see. Because when you look in that area, a lot of restaurants and bistros and things like that up and down Boylston Street, the Prudential Center, the bottom three, four floors of the Prudential Center is a lot like Trump Tower in New York, where it's a mall. So you have a lot of stores in there from Neiman Marcus to Saks Fifth Avenue to Lululemon and so forth. But Lord & Taylor is a separate store on Boylston Street. And that's right at the finish line. So we will get you up to date if anything else develops. There is a press conference from the FBI at 5. Sarah Bartlett will have more details top of the hour, along with CBS News. Let's talk about the blue-white game. We bring in the outstanding beat writer from the Allentown Morning Call, Mark Wogenrich. Mark, welcome. Great to have you back on the show.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks a lot.
You go to Saturday's game. You and I both know it'll be vanilla in a lot of ways, but what will you watch for?
quarterbacks, and I guess quarterbacks. I don't see how you cannot go to this game and not at least try to get a little feel for these two guys. It just seems like quarterbacks always maybe try to do a little too much in spring games, at least within the confines of what they're allowed to do, or try to maybe show off for the people, the 40, 50, 60, 70,000, whoever, however many people are going to be there, if not to necessarily win their coaches' hearts because they've had 15 practices and then we'll have August to do that again. Maybe the people. Maybe somebody, you know, give somebody a out there a look at what they're going to do. I don't expect them, you know, to see them do a ton, but I'm just interested to see how they're going to handle things like huddles and plays and certain throws, at least what Bill O'Brien is going to allow them to do. To me, that's really the big thing coming out of this game.
And doing so in front of a crowd. I mean, it's one thing to do it in practice with the noise turned up, but to do it in front of people, I think brings another element to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think we saw that Stephen Bench can handle it last year and that limited playing time he got. I mean, I still don't know that I can find a true freshman quarterback whose first play of his career was a fourth down conversion. And, he really performed well in that limited sample. I think people more want to see then how he handles a longer form and also how Tyler Ferguson, what he really looks like physically, because nobody really has seen any of him. Outside from that, I would assume Bill O'Brien would be standing there mostly praying that nobody gets injured, because he's spoken quite a bit, and I thought openly, this preseason about how he's relaxed contact and tackling in order to keep, you know, these guys healthy, and something that he's going to have to address not just this season, but even more so in the future.
Hey, part of that, too, of course, is that that's allowed them, though, to get Kyle Carter and Adam Brenneman into the mix as this has gone along, which has been an important factor. When you watched last season, Mark, the way the Bill O'Brien offense operated, and let's really take the last 10 games of the season where they went 8-2, what struck you about the offense and how they go about their business with this?
I was really struck. There's certain formations that I can remember, specifically the plays where the tight ends were lined up essentially at fullback. I think we saw Jesse James run that. I think we saw Kyle Carter run that, where they'll align those guys and then flex them out into passing situations, flex them out into that wheel route. That actually was really successful. I noted that to be a very, you know, that was a very different move. Those sorts of things really struck me. Just how he was able to kind of pluck tight ends off the roster, maybe guys who didn't, you know, weren't really, hadn't really found a way on the team yet, and then found them specific things to do, gave them really good specific things to do, and just, you know, the touch and the feel that Allen Robinson and Matt McGloin seemed to really develop for each other later in that season. It just really looked like Matt McGloin, when he knew he needed to complete a pass, was going to Allen Robinson, and Allen Robinson knew the same thing, and he knew he was going to catch the ball. It was exciting to see, I guess, the things like the fourth down conversions and doing some of the different things on offense. But it was just really, I was more struck at just some of the formations they used and then how really just how well they ran a lot of the things that they were doing. They seemed very precise in their execution.
The next part of this in moving forward, we saw what Zach Swinnack could do. And I remember last year doing the post game with Jack Hamm, and we had Zach Swinnack on in the post game, and he carried, I think, the ball 36 times that day. And I said, look, I don't recall you carrying the ball 36 times the entire spring. Now it's a different proposition. Bill Belton's there. What about your interest in seeing Akeel Lynch?
Definitely. Zach Swinnack on one of the calls earlier today, and one of the interesting things that he noted about, you know, the way he's playing and also how he's interacting with Bill Belton and Akeel Lynch? Is that because they're not taking, you know, a lot of tackling drills and a lot of contact? He's kind of picked those guys heads about having to, you know, to run what he said a little more elusively, trying to avoid tackle. He was never a guy that I noticed was going to avoid a tackle when he got on that second level. He was lowering his shoulder. Maybe he can do, you know, maybe he can get those guys and, you know, teach them about a sidestep. I don't think he's going to be a spin move guy, but maybe just a little something. Instead of lowering his shoulder and running over somebody, they'd get extra yard going outside him. He noted that Akeel Lynch seemed to be crossed between himself and Bill Belton, you know, has the power size, but the speed to run. So that really looks like you've got three guys. And then you can use Bill Belton, you know, who Bill O'Brien has said is slimmer this year, looks a little quicker, if he can just get healthy. And you got three different guys who give you three different, you know, three very, I think, very different looks. And that's not necessarily to say that I don't think that it's going to be three different running backs, you know, or a committee, because they're, I assume they're still going to have their finger on a button of a hot hand that, you know, that's when that gets into a groove and he's 4 or 5 yards of carry, he's going to do that. Same with if Lynch gets in the situation. I think same with Belton. But it looks like they will, I get a sense that they might use these guys, again, Belton and Lynch specifically, in situational play. And, you know, heck, maybe Lynch could even take over as getting some more carries than Zach Swinnick, who right now is still the number one.
Right. Defensively, anything you're looking for there?
I want to see maybe some of the guys who've converted to cornerback, some of the receivers. Are like, you know, saw a lot of Trevor Williams playing receiver last year. What kind of conversion has he made? Because that gives them, you know, a couple more options. Last year, they were pretty open about the fact that struggling with cornerback depth and safety depth and defensive back depth, and having to, you know, to move those guys gives them nickel and dime packages, but it also maybe allows you to play Adrian Amos in different situations or different positions. The corners to me would be important. And then, you know, how confident and comfortable does Naeem Wortman look at linebacker? Because I'm sure, as you know, that is going to be a position to watch greatly as well. And Wortman, beyond staying healthy, is he the kind of player who, you know, on a consistent basis, on, you know, 70 or whatever, 50, 60, 70 plays a game, that he showed to be on special teams, some of the situational downs he got last year?
Now let's get to a couple of related topics, Mark. We all know that things are changing conferences on a consistent basis. We know that the Big Ten, let's see, what, 15 months from now is going to have 14 schools in it and new divisions and so forth. How have you felt about the expansion?
We're a little eastern of you guys, so it just looks a there still seems to be, I think, some people who live in this area, like Eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, some of the Beltway, maybe necessarily, not necessarily looking at this as really understanding the move just yet, still not feeling, the farther you come east, the less you feel part, I think, of the Big Ten, at least emotionally or psychologically or something like that. So I think the idea of the Big Ten stretching this far has potential if they can capitalize on some of the things that Jim Delaney had noted about maybe bringing, say, like Big Ten basketball tournaments to Madison Square Garden or D.C. or something like that, or the bowl game at Yankee Stadium, that sort of stuff. I really think they're going to have to win people over, you know. Not the worst idea in the world to put a Big Ten merchandise store in Manhattan somewhere.
Right.
It's just stuff like that. I think there's a lot of people here who can be won over, and you know, you go to Manhattan, people are going to be wearing Michigan and Ohio State gear. It's not like they're going to be lacking for fans there. You know, Michigan, Ohio State, Northwestern grads work on Wall Street. So I think they have the components of it. It's just a matter of assimilating maybe the universities and their core fan bases into the Big Ten, which, you know, geographically, it's just not what we're used to around here.
Are you surprised after 20 plus years in the conference? I mean, I'm not talking about 2 years, five, even 7 or 8 years, but after 20 plus years that the Big Ten has not taken hold in your area?
Penn State, I think that has taken hold, but even still, some of the, you know, the rivalries, the idea of, at least for Penn State fans that I know and see and talk to around here, and it, you know, probably is the case there, but Pitt's still considered a rivalry. I haven't played them in 10 years.
Right.
That sort of thing. I think maybe, and if the series were a little less one-sided with Maryland, I think that could be a great game, but it just hasn't been a two-sided series.
Right.
Over the years. And the same with Rutgers. I mean, that's going to take some time, and I think some competitive games to develop. But Penn State still, there's, you know, a very big fan base here. But this is also, you know, this is not, you know, when you're bringing in, if trying to compare with like the NFL teams and things like that, the Big Ten still has the Midwestern feel with the Chicago Bears. And this is, you know, the NFC East kind of territory with the Eagles and Giants. That to me rings a little bit different too. So Big Ten, I applaud its decision and idea to stretch eastward. It's a matter of how, you know, can they bring those people into the fold?
I think everyone expects, whether it's true or not, but people expect that 14 is not the cap. What are your thoughts? And if your thoughts are in the direction of bigger, where?
I haven't been following that really terribly closely, but it seems, at least conventionally, then you would, if you're going to go eastward, and, you know, using Maryland and Rutgers for population bases and marketing purposes and just through the number of television sets on the seaboard, would you not want to do something similar and maybe head southward? And go to the population territories, and then also with college, you know, where college sports are big. I think going into some of the ACC territories, and we've heard a lot about places like North Carolina, Virginia, and Georgia Tech. I think North Carolina would be a very interesting one because that brings a colossal name in basketball, and it's also, again, you're going into a territory that where college sports are very big. It's kind of returning back because college sports, again, with, you know, Rutgers, D.C., it's not, at least football just hasn't been a huge commodity. You know, maybe with Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Nebraska, playing at those sites, it could develop into one. But perhaps they're going into the college football territory, and I think they need, you know, the Big Ten would love, I'm sure, to address, you know, that territory everybody talks about. You know, recruiting, and you know, Bill O'Brien has talked about recruiting Florida, and he's not just talked about it, he's going and doing it.
Right.
I think a lot of the coaches would love to be able to see stretching into those, you know, into those areas, but also finding the schools that the Big Ten says would fit it.
Right.
You know, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and that's not me saying like that those schools are even remotely interested, but I think those are the temperatures you have to take.
Right. I want to go back to the people that you have talked with. There was a day when, for example, when Penn State played in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s, where fans, of course, would go to Beaver Stadium, enjoy their day at Beaver Stadium. But then when they went on the road, Rutgers was a nice drive. Maryland was an easy drive. Temple was an easy drive. Syracuse, West Virginia, Pitt. BC was a little further out. Is that the part that they miss?
That's a good point. I think that'll be an interesting thing that'll happen. I mean, we see it when Penn State plays Indiana in D.C., the number of fans who go to that game.
Right.
That was a very easy thing to see. Rutgers is going to be – Rutgers and Maryland, at least from this end, might sometimes, depending on how the tickets go in the future, might be easier tickets to get. There are some people, on the road, and it's, Rutgers for us is an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and a half as opposed to the 3 hours up and back to State College. So that, I think that from that perspective, that could drive some traffic.
What has been...
At least Penn State-wise. I'm not sure how that's going to work with Iowa going to Rutgers.
Right, yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mark, what has been your gauge of fans up and down the valley about... Bill O'Brien moving forward and having to get through the period of sanctions?
Mm-hmm. I get a real sense that there's a great fondness for what Bill O'Brien achieved last year. Mm-hmm. The high school coaches now in the area seem to be energized and revived about the staff coming through their schools and talking to kids again and recruiting the kids and talking to the coaches again and really making them a focus. Fans, football fans loved last season for what Bill O'Brien did on the field and at least for the positive energy that it seemed to restore to football. I remember talking about the Ohio State game last year, and it seemed like that was – people were coming to me, and it was the first time they were talking about a football game, really. I mean, it wasn't about, this is Bill O'Brien's first game, and this is, things happening at post-sanctions and whether Penn State is going to do something regarding Joe Paterno. That game, that Penn State-Ohio State game was, hey, let's go, let's talk about how to beat Ohio State in what we think is going to be a big football game. That said, there's still... I get just as many emails from people saying we're tired of the sanctions and the scandal talk as I do from people who say we don't want to move forward unless there are certain conditions and parameters that the university hasn't addressed. Mm-hmm. So there's a big split. Franco Harris is coming here in a couple of weeks, and I think he's going to be a fairly popular draw. So there are people, there's still a fault line. There's definitely still people on both sides. I don't know that I don't know how long it's going to take for people or what needs to happen for people to come to one side.
Mark, always a pleasure. You know that. Can't wait to see you here Saturday.
Yeah, we'll see you Saturday. Appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
Mark Welgenridge, Allentown Morning Call, Penn State football beat writer. Next half hour, Bob Crow from State College, who is literally in between the bomb blasts when it happened on Monday. His perspective on the ground as it happened for him. Next half hour, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. With so many great deals in bloom, you'll be thinking spring. Like a 2004 Volvo XC90 2.9-liter twin-turbo, $7,997. 2010 Chevy Impala four-door sedan, $13,284. 2012 Ford Fiesta five-door hatchback SE. Call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. 2010 Ford Mustang Black, just $14,998. 2012 Hyundai Elantra, four-door GLS, $15,943. And a 2008 Ford F-150 Super Crew Lariat, $23,999. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.